Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to Your Booked. I'm your book inspector, Daisy Buchanan. My latest book, Limelight, is out now. If you'd like a personalised signed copy of that or of any of my books, you can order one from the Margate Bookshop. They deliver nationwide. If you're listening on Monday, July the 24th, I'll be at MiOMI in Liverpool with former guests and podcast pals Lucy Vine and Lindsay Kelk tomorrow on the 25th of July. And I'm at Prima Donna Festival with Rebecca Humphreys on Friday the 28th of July. There are more tour dates coming in September. I'm at House of St Barnabas for Under the Covers with Ella Bertode on the 12th of September, Comedia in Bath with Sarah Pascoe on the 13th of September, and at Rossiter's Books in Great Malvern on the 14th of September. Now to today's guest. We've got a fabulous author to end the series with, Yomi Adegoke, co-author of Slay in Your Lane. We're celebrating her brilliant debut novel, The List, a story about social media, exposure, rumours and bad behaviour. Yomi and I talked about our shared obsession with Jackie Collins, the game that kicked off her writing career, the books that are so good they make us want to quit writing, and more. Enjoy. Yomi, I'd like to ask you about something you mentioned brilliantly. I'm so happy you did this. I wish more of our guests would do it. You sent over a list of books and things you wanted to talk about, and you mentioned that the thing that made you want to be a writer is a game, and a game I'd not heard of called Storybook Weaver, which sounds amazing. Can you tell me about Storybook Weaver?
Oh my God, Storybook Weaver was a game that I was playing when everyone else was playing, like, I don't know, like Tomb Raider or whatever else people with PS2s did, or PS1s even, showing my age. But yeah, I didn't have a PS1 or a PS2, but I did have a big chunky Dell computer. And my dad, alongside buying us, Mavis Beacon typing thing to sort of help us like learn to touch type, he also bought us this game called Storybook Weaver, which no one in the world has heard of, except me and my sisters. And it was kind of like a 90s... it must have been like 90s, because I was genuinely probably like 7 or 8 when I was playing that, maximum 10. But it was a computer game which, I mean, it sounds so lame, but you really just wrote books on it. Like, it was like, it basically had this little page that had like a section for pictures and had a section for writing. And the pictures, you'd basically, I think it had like a freehand bit that you could draw your own pictures on, I think, if I remember correctly. But basically it had all these like characters, like you could have a little picture of a witch and you could have like a little picture of a queen and just really like archetypal stock fairy tale characters that you could then, and then it had like backdrops. So you could have like a backdrop with pyramids or a backdrop set in like medieval England. And you could just create stories using those pictures. And then it had like a little bar for writing and you wrote your stories in there. So I'm always telling people that the last entire book that I wrote before The List was actually this series called Baby World 1-7, which was The Rugrats, but like set in all these like surreal settings because of Storybook Weaver. And I used to write those books on Storybook Weaver when I was genuinely about between the ages of maybe 7 and 10. And then there was like a 20-something year gap, and then it was the list. So, yeah.
Oh, I love that so much. So was it like a kind of like an expanded Rugrats universe? Were you taking those characters or adding your own?
I was plagiarizing. So it was it was Rugrats because I was, you know, a child in the 90s that was watching Rugrats like everyone else and hadn't really developed my own voice at that point. So it was like, I'll just take Tommy and call him Timmy, and then take like Chucky and call him like Chuck. Like it was literally that. But because it just had, there were some of the stock images were babies, and there was this group of like ethnically diverse babies from different like countries and stuff, that I thought, oh, let's do a little story based around them, and it'll just be Rugrats. So basically they literally had like a key and they'd like escape. But I think it was more expanded in terms of, because the backdrops were very different, and like you literally could have any backdrop you wanted, they would escape. I mean, I think in Rugrats it was literally like them escaping into their parents' kitchen, whereas in Baby World, very inventively titled, it was more them escaping to literally like Mount Kilimanjaro and like the Eiffel Tower. It was a lot more extreme, their adventures. But yeah,
I want to read Baby World so badly.
There's seven of them somewhere.
I'm sure you've got plans for, like, you know, the book after the list, but you know, your readers and fans want Baby World. We want it bad. Now, we are both big fans of Jackie Collins.
I love her. She rest in peace. Yeah, she was a legend.
So what was your first Jackie Collins book, and how did you find her? Was it like, was there a book in the house? Did you find her at the library? What was it about? Because those covers are so sort of iconic.
They are so iconic.
I remember having such like a visceral reaction to it. Like, I feel like I shouldn't read this and I want to.
Yes, exactly that. So in my house, my dad is like a voracious reader, and like he used to just have shelves and shelves and shelves and shelves of books. And like read a lot, and there's always been somebody who like loved reading and like reading to us and telling us stories. And my mum likes to read as well, but she kind of was like less voracious than my dad. But she did have this like one dedicated shelf which just had all these books that were kind of like embossed with like shiny foil lettering, and had like, you know, pearls and lipstick and like stiletto heels on them. And I was like, what on earth is this shelf that like only my mum reads? And it was just Jackie Collins books, like literally every single one that she's probably ever written in the world. I think she had a couple of Daniel Steeles in there as well. And I just remember thinking, like, kind of magpie, like, okay, you know, this is shiny. What is this about? I don't know. Like, it's one of those weird ones, but it's like, how do you know before even picking up that it's kind of like verboten? You can just tell. I don't know why. Like, I was definitely very young, maybe like 11 or something, maybe 12. And I remember like picking them up and being like, I know I'm definitely not allowed to read these, but they look great. And then, yeah, like, I think the first ever one I read was The World is Full of Married Women, and the second one was The World is Full of Divorced Men, I think it was called. And there was also this book called Lucky that I read. I like read loads, but the thing with the Jackie Collins multiverse is they all do tend to like blur after a while, as excellent as they are. Like, and also I was incredibly young, far too young to be reading it. So I actually can't like remember them very distinctly, but I just remember like probably reading that entire shelf when I was like definitely in the tail end of like primary school. No, probably the early years of secondary school. So I remember reading it on the bus and kind of like, as everyone did, like hiding it in something else.
Lucky is such an incredible character, and I'm the same, because everything's woven together. I'm not sure I could tell you. I've read those books, but like I don't know what the difference is, which I feel really, really bad about. But
I'm exactly the same boat.
I'm not sure how many people would agree with me, but I think like when you're like a teenage girl or a preteen, she's such a great role model. When you think of, kind, you know, it's that like at school you're doing like, you know, books about like sad Victorian women who are like stay at home or, you know, get punished and get pregnant and get thrown in the tower or whatever, and she's sort of doing everything on her own terms.
Definitely.
I really love the business bits as well.
It was time, exactly, very 80s, very kind of like, you know, shoulder pads and money and like, yeah, yuppie vibes. All about, it was very much like girl boss before girl boss.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you said, I can't, it's so difficult to think of them as distinct books because it all does really blur. But it's like that quote where it's like, I think it's Maya Angelou, and it's like, you might not remember what someone said, but you remember how it makes you feel. Because I remember it being like a proper, like, you know, coming of age thing, reading all those books. And reading lots of, like, my sister had these books. it's interesting because obviously publishing is not hugely diverse, but my sister used to get these books from a shop called Books Etc. in Croydon, which I think is now defunct. And like they used to have all these books imported from America, which were really black and had black authors and black protagonists. And there was a book called, one was called Fly Girl by I think a guy called Omar Tyree, and another book called Milk in My Coffee. I can't remember if it's the same author, but again they were really kind of like saucy and they were black as well, like all black characters, so that was like a whole new thing. But it was, I was reading very much like after I'd finished stealing my mum's books, I kind of like graduated onto stealing my older sister's book and like books rather, like very much left Tracy Beaker, as much as I love Jacqueline Wilson, like left that behind because like found this whole world of like things I shouldn't be reading.
That sounds great though, and the energy it gives you and the excitement when you know it's there.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
This idea, I mean, I believe that so much, and I think now I miss that. Like now I can read as much as I like, and I can read what I want when I want, and I miss reading being a bit forbidden and
yeah,
a bit delicious.
Definitely.
So let's talk about Jacqueline Wilson, because I'm sometimes surprised she doesn't come up more on the podcast, because, you know, we all love her and she is
phenomenal.
Amazing.
Yeah, she's excellent. Yeah, no, she's a complete icon. Me and my best friend, Elizabeth Uvebenene, who you obviously spoke to, interviewed.
No, Liz.
We actually both were speaking about how much, anytime we're asked about, like, you know, formative books, we bring up Jacqueline Wilson. And then we co-wrote a kid's book together, The Offline Diaries. And she actually gave us a quote. And for both of us, it was like a really kind of like, you know, we've had some quotes in from some really cool people, but yeah, Jacqueline Wilson was really something because she was so central to us as like young people growing up and as young girls who like to read a lot. And yeah, I think she's just such an icon. And as you said, I think she is certainly, you know, not raised as much, not even just on the podcast, just generally speaking. I don't think she necessarily, I think everyone knows she's like iconic and legendary, but yeah, I do think she deserves her flowers somewhat more because just in terms of representation of normal people, working class people, people with like difficult lives and like not necessarily straightforward stories. She was a complete pioneer, I feel, in that space for it, like, you know, for young kids to be exposed to things like, you know, poverty and like mental illness. You know, obviously it's part of real life, many people's real lives. And I think she wrote about those things in a way that was not just like accessible, but like for young people, but like in many ways joyful, in many ways exciting. Like, I think I literally had every single Jacqueline Wilson book in existence at one point.
I'd never thought about this before, but I was just thinking about Tracy Beaker. And like, I did not think that Tracy Beaker, like, her mum was imaginary. I was like, no, of course. Yeah. Her mum's definitely a Hollywood star and her mum's coming to get her. It's going to be fine. But in different ways, I think some of the stuff that's like, when I was reading that book, I was being really, really, really horribly bullied at school. And I think that taught me to escape reality
right.
in that way. And it hasn't occurred to me at all before, but I think that's possibly why I'm a writer now, because that was what...
Right.
The book was so comforting and so fun that it was also a lesson about how imagination is always what saves us.
100%. 100%. Like, the way that escapism was kind of, like, depicted, like, was just... I don't know, even at such a young age, it was just so brilliantly done, I feel. And I do think imagination was so at the core of the story of, like, Tracy Beaker. And I think that's what you just said is probably going to resonate with a lot of people, because I do think that, yeah, it was, you know, that was a story of, like, resilience and, like, creativity and all these different things, but simultaneously was, like, aimed at 8-year-old, I think it was like a middle grade book or something.
Yeah.
And so many of her books, like, you know, I mentioned in the list of The Tattooed Mum, which is about like mental illness. And again, the way that was depicted, it's like, I didn't necessarily when I was first reading it, like exactly understand what was going on. But like on some, I think like subconscious level, it gave me an understanding. And she's just... Gosh, like everything from like that to like Dustbin Baby, like she's written some really bleak books. I remember I saw a thread where someone was just like writing all the themes of her books out, and like, when you kind of see it spark like that, it's like, whoa, like, yeah, she was writing some heavy hitting stuff, but so pioneering and like so important, I think.
And it's really smart. I'd never thought of this before either, but I was just thinking about how, I don't know if you remember those, like, why, I think I'm a little bit older than you, so I don't know if this would have come up, but there was this massive trend for like YA books about nuclear war, and they all look bleak as anything, and they had names like "I Was Brother in the Land" and "Z for Zachariah," and these books are, and quite often we'd sort of be, you know, given them to read in English classes, but there was nothing like appealing about them.
Mm.
But those Nick Sharrett illustrations, a Jacqueline Wilson book, was so bright and fun and gorgeous, and it looked like something you'd want to read. And there was nothing on the front that screamed like, this is a book about divorce or
mental illness. Yeah, it's such a dustbin baby. It was literally the girl in the bin. I think it was the grown girl kind of like with a scowl in the bin. And I still thought, it was giving me like Cartoon Network vibes. I was like, this is going to be fun. Like, yeah. And it was fun somehow. Tracy Beaker was fun.
Like, it was absolutely like, if you like Rugrats, you'll love this.
Yeah, exactly. I remember so many people said that like watching Tracy Beaker and reading it had made them be like, I really want to be in like Care. I want to be like, which is just mental. But like, that's kind of how I guess like vividly she depicted Tracy Beaker world. And even though maybe generally speaking she doesn't come up enough like in when we kind of think of like iconic British children's books authors, but certainly like interpersonally, like everyone does like bring her up because she just did so much for like so many young people. I think,
did you see that documentary about Gigi Bloom?
But I haven't, no, because I've never read what's the book called,
Are You There, God,
It's Me, Margaret. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I haven't read it, but I know it's like an absolute iconic work. So I know the documentary you're talking about, so I was like, I should probably read the book before I get into the documentary.
I'd love to know what it's like to read it now, because I read it when I was young and I think I was just primed for it. But the thing I will never get over about that documentary is the fans and the way she really took care of her fans, and you know, hundreds and thousands of young women and the role she played in their lives, and that the intimacy of it. Like, I was thinking about, I suppose, Jacqueline Wilson, what you're saying about her not perhaps getting the recognition she deserves, but she is in our hearts in a way that I don't think maybe Dickens isn't necessarily.
Yes, or, very true.
You know, that people who sort of think, well, this is a great work of literature, but you're very remote. And
100%.
When we're eight, we're never going to be given a book. And well, I don't really like this, but someone says it's very good and very important, so I should like it.
This is so true. 100% about that remote thing. 100%. I felt like I knew Jacqueline Wilson growing up. I really felt like she was like just this like auntie that like lived somewhere that I knew. And I think that's like similar probably with like Mallory Blackman. I remember like reading Pig Heart Boy and just feeling like, you know, she is someone that I know. Noughts and Crosses, like her, just, she's just, they're just so formative. And I think, as you said, that care that they have for the fans, and they feel really like, through their writing, through what they write about, they feel really warm. And like, having interviewed Mallory Blackman for Slaying Your Lane, like, can definitely attest to that. She was absolutely lovely. But like, yeah, even before that, I kind of felt like she was just this extension of like the people I had in my world, like my friends and family. Then there's like Mallory Blackman and Jacqueline Wilson who are writing books for me. That's kind of my understanding of it.
Of course they are. Because we interviewed Mallory on the podcast, and her memoir, Just Saying, it's one of my favourite books last year.
Oh my gosh. I need to read that. And also I need to listen to that episode because I love her.
I will send you the link. But I think I was expecting, because it was like a memoir, and I thought, is it going to be quite kind of, not grand, but you know, because I thought I have so much respect for her and how she's so prolific, and it's going to be quite serious. And it sounds like her. I don't know why that surprised me, but it's just a story that grabs you and yanks you through it. And I knew that she'd not had an easy time at all growing up, but like the depths of it and her own story. And I was, again, it was like a bit like, I suppose, that Jacqueline Wilson feeling, like she's writing about some really bleak, dark, challenging things, but it's really compulsive, and the warmth of her voice, I just can't stop reading.
That's so true, actually. It's only just when you said that, I thought, wait a minute, Pig Heart Boy was about a heart transplant. Like, just completely forgot. And Noughts and Crosses was literally about racism. Yeah, like, I actually kind of forgot how bleak the themes were in, like, a lot of those books, because, again, it was written so propulsively and, like, thrillingly and interestingly. And, yeah. No, sorry, that was just like a realisation.
Because what was it like when you and Elizabeth wrote your book for, you know, a sort of, I suppose, a younger audience?
Mm.
Was it difficult to kind of reconcile wanting to kind of get in and be as direct as you possibly can, but also, I don't know, did you have to fight any kind of urge to kind of be a big sister and be like, I want to make the world safe for you, I want to guide you through this?
That's such a good question. You know what, I actually think no, primarily because I do think Jacqueline Wilson, so when it came to actually like the writing of it, I hadn't read a children's book in God knows how many years, or even thought about a children's book in so many years. So I remember like immediately trying to like, you know, it's like access your inner child, and literally the first books that I thought of were Jacqueline Wilson books. And I think she deals with such hard-hitting themes with such a light touch that even though we were focused on things like the internet and bullying, and I mean, it's certainly not as dark as the themes that she's touched on, but I think I did feel less of that impulse to be protective because that was the work that like had come to mind first, Jacqueline Wilson's. So I hadn't really thought of that. But what I would say I definitely struggled with was the fact that like, I always say this, I don't know many children. I know two children. One is my, well, hardly a child, my recently born cousin who I call nephew because he's so wee, like he's just turning one in I think this week or next week.
Happy birthday, Toby.
And my godson Elijah, who is four and was probably I think two or three when we were in the process of doing the offline diaries, so I couldn't really speak to him about what eight to 12 year olds are interested in. So I'm always saying I don't know any kids, so anytime I like came into contact with a child, whether it was like, oh, I was at an event and someone's kid was there, or like I remember I had builders in and they had like, he had kids that sometimes he'd bring on the job, and I'd literally have to be like, hello fellow children, what do you guys do, like what are you interested in, what do you think about outside of school, what do you think about in school, what are your friends like? Because I was like, I actually have not thought about this stuff in genuinely 20 years. So it was a real like, I mean, I'm used to doing research as a journalist, but I would say it was a very research heavy project because Elizabeth has lots and lots of siblings. I only have two, and I've got one older sister and one little sister who is 2 years younger than me. So I was having to like try and, you know, understand a child's psyche, which even when you try to access like your own memories, it's still really difficult, especially because I think the anxieties and concerns of children today, two, you know, issues that affect kids generally, but I think because our book was about the internet, there is a certain specificity to the issues that are facing children today. So that was really hard because I was like, I'm having to, I don't know what bothers them. And thankfully I did like bump into a few children of friends and stuff like that that I could then like interview about what was going on in their lives. And it was really just like, yeah, my favorite color's red. I don't like this person I'm sat next to in maths. So I was like, okay, it's pretty simple, but at the same time, like it feels like all that stuff feels like your whole world back then.
It's true. And I think it's such a gift. I think that all children want to feel listened to, want to appreciate their importance, because they don't get a lot of that. And I dare say that's something that doesn't change too much. But
precisely.
Are they as worried about the internet as we are, do you think?
Oh, gosh, you know what? That's a really good question. I think maybe not immediately so, but certainly I think the age range that we were looking at, which was like 8 to 12, I think certainly by the time they're hitting secondary school, 11, 12, it really feels like maybe even more so, just because so much of it is part of their formative experience. And I guess so many of us remember life before the internet. So you'd hope we have a bit more of an ability to disengage and take a step back and, you know, touch grass, as people say. I don't know what, or I think through writing the book, I've learned a bit more of what it is like to kind of be born into that experience and navigate like a level of immediacy and intimacy with like everyone, because you're on the internet. And I know there's obviously safeguarding for kids and stuff, but still there's just a level of like access that I think trying to process at such an early age must be incredibly, incredibly difficult.
I'm 38 and I find that very useful. I wanted to get back to your list because you mentioned a book that I really, really love. I think you said it's one of your favourite books you recommend or give the gift, An American Marriage by Terry Jones.
Yes, I'm obsessed with that book, and therefore by proxy obsessed with T.R.E. Jones. I remember finishing it and then immediately going on Twitter and Instagram to see if she had an account, which I thought, my God, like, and then I realized she didn't have one. And I thought, this is why, because she doesn't want people, she doesn't want people like me to like get to the end of her book and be like, hi, I just wanted to say this is phenomenal. Because I really was. So I remember I was on the plane back from Barbados, finishing it, not Barbados, sorry, the Bahamas, finishing it, and like was literally sobbing, like to the point where the air hostess was like, are you okay? And I was like, oh no, it's this book I'm reading. And that's only ever happened, it's always on planes. Like I remember when I was watching Blood Diamond when I was like, can't remember how old, but like a teenager, and just like sobbing on a plane, and someone being like, "Are you okay?" And me being like, "Yes, I'm fine. Must not ever cry on a plane again because it's really embarrassing." And the whole row starts to be concerned. And but yeah, I just found it incredibly like moving. Beautifully written. It's rare I read something and I'm like, I wish I wrote that. Like, it's like quite rare, but it was just so expertly written, so moving, funny in places. And yeah, I think she really managed, obviously she did the whole dual perspective thing, which I guess in many ways is something that like, it's her work that kind of helped me in terms of building that dual perspective of, you know, seeing the different perspectives of a relationship. And yeah, I just think it's such an excellent read. It's one of those reads where I know that art is subjective and, you know, I think probably nowhere more so than within books, but I do use it as a bit of a litmus test. Like, if someone doesn't like an American Marriage, I'm very much concerned about their taste. Most things I let slide, but I'm like, it's just too stellar a book. Love it.
Firstly, I am convinced, and I'm not sure of the science of this, I do believe something happens to us at altitude and on planes. We laugh harder and cry harder. There's some weird like emotional,
like sort of
an inhibition that goes. I really want to talk about, because you said talked about the humour, and I think about that a lot, and I think it's extraordinary because it's such a dark, heavy series, or rather, it's not a dark, heavy serious book, but the subject is. And I think I was quite nervous of it because I'm like, I know what it's about and I know it won the Women's Prize and it's just going to be really serious and really intense and difficult. And her lightness of touch, and that it's something I think about a lot, where you don't have to have a joke in every line, although that is my preference. It needs to be a universe where you believe that the characters might tell a joke or laugh, because that's what humans do. And I think she does that so
well.
Beautifully.
It's probably like, honestly, I think it's probably the funniest and saddest book I've ever read, in terms of it being like the only book that I've seen be sort of equal parts sad and funny. And like, it's not like it's a little bit sad and it's a little bit funny. It's like, no, it's hilarious and it's also devastating. Like, it's, I don't know how she's managed to find that balance, but she really did. And it's just also like, it's so lyrically and beautifully written. Yeah, like, I honestly think it's probably up there as one of the best books I've ever read in my life. And I think it's perfect. And I don't think that about many things.
I love that idea as well about it being a test. You're like, here's a book, you will like it. And if you don't like it, that's it, we're done.
Yes, exactly. I remember like seeing this tweet that was saying the slightest thing a man can do is read your favourite book, which is very true. I've had like lots of guys I've met like read The Handmaid's Tale because that's one of my favourite books. And I've always thought, oh God, that is really like kind of like, you know, it does kind of speak to you on this like all romantic level, like, oh, you want to read my favourite book. And I feel like I kind of flip that and I'm like, okay, you read my favourite book, that's great, but if you don't then like my favourite book, so if you don't like The Handmaid's Tale, you don't like An American Marriage by T.R.B. Jones, I am a little bit like, it can kind of work in reverse. Because I remember someone did read An American Marriage, like a friend of mine, and they were like, oh, it's all right. And I was like, oh my God, I'd almost rather you hated it rather than be like, it's okay. Kind of like looked at them a bit sideways after that. Not on a personal level, just on a taste level, like,
I'm a bit taken aback. Who is this? Because, you know, whatever you say, even if you're like, oh no, I'm sorry, it wasn't really for me because I only like books about robots, but the prose was exquisite.
It was exactly that. That's how I feel about Luster as well. I think Luster is phenomenal. And I've met a few people be like, oh, you know, like, oh, I wasn't really into it, it wasn't for me. And I absolutely get when people are like, something's not for them. And I think it's totally fair. And I think you should engage with, you know, work and art as it is. So if you are someone who only reads like beach reads or only likes like sci-fi, and then you're now presented with something completely different, totally fine if you don't feel it's for you. But in my mind, you should at least still be able to appreciate the skill of the thing. And like, as you said, the prose. And I feel like even if, you know, you are someone who wants a more plot, you know, heavy character led like novel where you feel it's a little bit more propulsive, you can't question Raven Alani's pen. Like, she is an exquisite writer. So when people are kind of like, meh, I'm like, yeah, how did you come to that conclusion? But then I say this also understanding, trying to be like, you know, balanced, to be like, oh, like, art's subjective, but I'm like, except when it's not.
except when it's Raven Alani and Tara Jones.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile.
From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
We'll be back with Yummy soon, but now it's time for my Steal of the Week. I've chosen Stranger on a Train by Jenny Diskey, a memoir about travel, strangers, strangeness, and smoking. Jenny circles America and encounters all kinds of people and stories, mostly in the smoking carriages of the Amtrak trains. She shares her past sparingly to frame her present. The writing is generous, touching, funny, elegant, and sad. It's a book about people in place. It's poignant and hopeful, and it will really stay with you. Stranger on a Train by Jenny Diskey is published by Virago and out now. Now back to Yummy.
I still remember because I had a proof of luster and that like delicious physical sensation in my body. It gripped me like from my spine up to my neck, down to my ankles. And also just having that moment of like, I should probably quit writing because this is perfect.
Oh my God,
but
yeah.
Okay, fine, I'll quit.
I think I actually was in the process of, I'm pretty sure I was writing maybe parts of the list when I was reading it. Same with, I think I was reading American Marriage as well. I was reading a lot of excellent books and literally having to like take breaks because I was like, okay, I can't, this could like kind of like be something that makes me take a permanent break from writing because it's just too excellently written. Too excellent. Yeah, I just thought it was so good. I think I was also reading Exciting Times by Nisha Dolan, which I really, really loved. And I think they both had this thing of like, you'd start a sentence and you wouldn't know where it would go. And it'd be like funny in a really unhinged, surreal way. I think both those books were really quite like unhinged, but in the best way possible. And like, surprising, which I think was, yeah, a lot of fun.
I wonder if what those two have in common, Exciting Times and Luster, is they've both got protagonists where all the way through I was like, I don't even know how I feel.
Yes.
And
oh
that really
God.
Hooked me and kept
Absolutely.
Coming back.
Absolutely, like, yeah. Really quite like droll and like, you know, just, I don't know, weird and, yeah, like I can't say I liked either protagonist, but I think they were brilliantly written and like witty, and I wanted to spend more time with them. It's kind of like, I don't think I've ever done a podcast. I'm hoping I would get to a point where I can do a podcast without bringing up Jesse Armstrong. I'm probably going to get a cease and desist from him at some point, because this is a books podcast, but somehow he always comes up. But I think because I love, obviously, Peep Show is like my favourite show in the world, and so I love Succession as well. And I think they have really horrible, fascinating, hilarious characters that, like, you feel you know and you want to spend time with even though you despise. It's very much rooting in spite of, like, problematic faves all throughout. And I think Luster and Exciting Times was very much that vibe where it was like, these are characters that you're not necessarily going to like, but, like, you know, the Fleabag, like, edit, if you will. Yeah.
And again, in a weird, weird way, Jeremy could almost be a Jacqueline Wilson character. Like, his capacity for self-deception is enormous. Oh, he only survives because he's living in a dream world.
Absolutely. Oh my God, Jeremy and Jacqueline Wilson. I mean, they'd have to like cut a lot of what he said, what he does. But yeah, it's very, very true, because he's like borderline, like, having full-on imagine, like, what's the word? He's practically in the throes of some sort of like psychosis at this at points in Peep Show, because he's just totally deluded. And genuinely, me and my sister, who are both like Peep Show obsessives, are always saying that, like, when it ended after 10 years, we genuinely were like, what are we gonna do? These are our friends.
Yeah.
Like, we really felt like we knew Jeremy. And like, sometimes things will happen where it'll be like when like Brexit happened, like really big world events, and like when Trump got in power, and we'd literally like, you can like hear yourself thinking like, I can hear what Mark Corrigan would say to this, and yes, I can hear what Jeremy would say to this, which is why you can then place Jeremy in the Jacqueline Wilson universe, because you, it's like, you know these people inside out and you can see how they operate in spaces that they're not in, but it's because they're so real to you. It's crazy.
What's that thing? Sorry, this is way off the subject of the podcast. When, you know, when they got, it's called like, not JML, JLB, the Where Mark Works, and they all get locked out and it's gone bankrupt.
Oh my
and he
God.
Sort of takes control and he keeps saying, it's not like time will tell. Yeah. Some like, put, like completely meaningless,
oh my God,
sort of
when
pretentious
he's like, a
phrase.
Chance would be a fine thing.
Yes.
Oh my God. No, yeah, that was that. Also, it was filmed in Croydon, like quite literally up my road where I used to live, where I grew up. So it felt even more viscerally real to me. And I remember seeing Patterson Joseph, who played Alan Johnson, and just cornering him at an event and being like, you are so important. I was like, you played this like really specific, like black corporate guy that like, basically you played the person that like so many people I went to uni with, like graduated and became. And I've never seen it like portrayed on TV with such specificity and so accurately. And I just look like, I don't know, there was just something about how that was done where I felt like people like really like obviously see it in Succession, but I think Peep Show is even more perfect where they feel so viscerally real. Because yeah, and I think it doesn't mean that you like them, but it means that you relate to them so heavily and deeply. And I used to watch Peep Show and think, I'm a 13-year-old girl and why do I feel like I have so much in common with this like mid 20s or 30s white man who's like working in like a corporate office. But I think when it comes to like Luster, Exciting Times, even though like The Happy Couple by Misha Dolan as well, like again, it's these characters that you don't necessarily, and also Such a Fun Age, I'd say, which is
yes,
another book I love.
Really glad you mentioned
that. Brilliant book.
That was just blindingly great.
Yes, and I didn't feel like, I mean, Alex, for instance, Amira's boss, I wouldn't say like I liked Alice. Of course, now I think about it, this is also the case with Juniper in Yellowface.
Yes,
again, these characters that you don't like, but they feel really real. Therefore, you want to spend time with them, even though it can almost be like a disorienting, kind of uncomfortable experience. I felt like with, not so much with Yellowface, because I actually really like couldn't wait for like Juniper to get her, or June to get her comeuppance, but certainly in Such a Fun Age, I really did kind of find myself empathizing with Alex in places because she was so real.
That's so interesting, because when I read Such a Fun Age, I remember I felt very ashamed because I saw how I was like Alex, and I was like, I am a terrible, terrible white woman committing all these microaggressions. And it was what I love as well is that Kylie Reid sort of, a bit like Peep Show, she takes no prisoners.
Yes.
And Amira's so great, but everyone, and even her awful sort of like savior boyfriend, and there's almost, there's no judgment but from her. So there's loads of judgment and she just kind of stands back and goes, aren't they terrible?
She literally just presents. And I feel like that was something that very much has like certainly influenced my writing of the list in terms of like, because you're writing a dual perspective. And I feel like it's interesting how, see, for instance, you didn't really like, you quite liked Amira, right? But I've read a lot of like feedback from people who are like, oh, they found Amira kind of annoying because she wasn't really like present and she didn't really, she was just kind of a passive character. And I interviewed Kylie Reid around the publication of her book. And I remember she was saying that like, she will find a lot of white women really, really do not like Alex, but a lot of Black women and minority women will actually empathize with her more. And I think it's because we're coming at them from like different perspectives. So I guess you kind of humanize and empathize sometimes with the opposite, which I think is interesting. Same way that a lot of people that have read the list have been like, a lot of men have really hated Michael and really empathized with Ola. And a lot of women have really empathized with Michael and really not liked Ola. So I think to me, that's like a sign of like just really trying to, as you said, no judgment, just presents characters. And I think, yeah, Kylie Reid's Such a Fun Age is definitely one of maybe like a handful of books that I've read and been like, I actually wish I wrote this because it's just so brilliant. And I think, yeah, like, I don't think that I would certainly look at someone like June in Yellowface as a villain. Mm-hmm. Alex, I just see her as like, she's almost like a tragic character. She's almost like, you know, Shakespearean, because you just feel like, oh god, like she's just hopeless and you're just watching this like definitely coming fall of hers.
She's almost like Alex, kind of a Curtis Sittenfeld character.
Oh,
that she wanted in.
But just like, and there's another novel took a wrong turning.
And then, no. But also on that theme, I have this fantasy that Kylie Reid will write Amira's origin story, because there's this bit at the beginning I think about all the time where Amira talks about how in her family, like, everyone is good at something and everyone has a hobby and everyone slots in and she's just lost and coasting. I'm like, I want to know like what it was like to grow up with that and what Amira's siblings are like.
Yeah, I actually remember that bit because I remember her siblings don't come up much, but I do remember she was, you know, the trait of hers that I think irritates some people, that she kind of felt like she was in constant free fall and like wasn't really doing anything, wasn't really good at anything. I would read any kind of story surrounding any of those characters, and some of them had only been mentioned within like a few paragraphs. I think she's got another book coming out like called Come and Get It, and I'm like desperately like constantly checking up like, her proof's gone out yet, because I need to get in on that.
Okay, if anyone is listening who might be in a position to, please also send me the proof, meaning I'm desperate for the proof. Send it our way. You mentioned a book that I have not read yet, but people keep talking to me about it and it's on top of my pile and I'm desperate to read it. Is This Okay by Harriet, is she Gibson or a Gibson?
I don't know. I say Gibson, but you know what? I say that because I read it, like most words I don't say out loud. This is what you realise doing podcasts, having to pronounce things. You're like, oh, hang on a minute, I've never said this word. So I think it's, I've only ever said Harriet out loud. I think it's, I say Gibson. So sorry, Harriet, if it's Gibson. But oh my God. I basically, after I read it, I remember like sort of closing it and immediately going on social media and like just like begging her to write fiction, because I was just like, I've never in my life, and I kind of grew up on the like memoirs of like Katie Price and what's her name, Jodie Marsh and stuff. So like I've read like pretty, you know, interesting, salacious celebrity memoirs and stuff, and I've like read, you know, kind of more serious memoirs by like Barack Obama and like Michelle Obama and Nelson Mandela, but I have never ever enjoyed a memoir more. Again, I think there's just something about, in the same way when I read Luster, I was like, this is so unhinged and so like hilarious. There's that kind of thing where you're laughing like in that way you do at tweets where you kind of like expel air from the nostrils, but like, you know what I mean? But Is This Okay? It had me like crying. Like I struggle to, basically, I will start a book and it doesn't matter how good it is, it's very difficult for me to read it in that one sitting. Like often I can read a book over several years because I'll like get to 100 pages and then be distracted by other books on the pile, then I'll come back to it 3 years later and finish it. But I think I literally read that in like 2 days. It was so like I think the sacrifice that went into that book, the anecdotes, the rawness of those stories, like not just emotionally, but like just the amount of cringe, the amount of like embarrassing things that happen in that book, the amount of stuff that she's like given to a reader for nothing other than our entertainment and titillation and just like for us to be moved and moved by it. I just can't like commend her enough. It's just, I think I read it this year. If I did, it's still my book of the year. But between that and Oh Sister by Jodie Chapman, very much love that book also. But yeah, like I just think she is such an effortless, excellent writer, and she's so, so funny. It made me really kind of rethink, I suppose, confessional writing or non-fiction writing, because I've always been someone that holds back quite a lot. I'm quite a private person and I've always felt like, you know, that doesn't really affect how good I can write something. Whereas with Is This Okay, she really lays everything bare, and the book is better for it. Like I don't know how she feels with everything out there, but all I know is the book is certainly better for it. Like, it is, it's phenomenal. And I couldn't stop gushing about it if you paid me. Like, I won't stop because it's just excellent. It really, I don't know I'm just going on, but I can't recommend it enough because it really is so funny.
So excited about reading this book.
It's insane.
Brilliant.
It's the craziest thing I think I've ever read, but it is so great.
I felt that way about Fern Brady's book, Strong Female Character. I don't know if you've read that yet.
No.
I think you'd love it. Because I thought, oh, is it going to be quite dark and quite serious? Because I knew that, you know, she's not had an easy life and she writes about it. But again, it's so frank, it's so generous, it's so kind of visceral. And yeah, I felt like she'd taken my hand and pulled me into the book like the Aha video and just yanked me through it. I think you'd love it.
That is exactly the description I give for Is This Okay, in terms of I felt like I was literally put in a DeLorean and taken back to like the worst parts of like the noughties. And it's just, yeah, like it's, and also even you just saying that, like, just reminded me, oh no, wait, there were really serious themes in this book. There were really serious themes, really serious bits in the book. Like quite a lot of it is, but it is just written in this way that is so, it's so frank, it's so funny. And I almost forgot, but I remember being like, it's also very like, everything happens very breakneck. So you are crying with laughter in 1 second and then you're literally crying like of sadness in like the next chapter or the next paragraph, because it shifts so much, but it shifts so like effortlessly. Yeah, definitely my book of the year so far.
I love that. It sounds amazing. You also mentioned that JD Chapman book, which I don't know anything about. I'd love to hear about that.
Oh my God. Just one of the most beautifully, like, I think I really appreciate writing on a technical level and as a skill. So again, one of those proofs I got, I'm actually currently like, I've been on a proof ban for like a while because I'm looking at my shelf right now and I'm like, I've like doubled up in terms of, I have books in front of the books on my shelf because there's no space. And yeah, it's just, I've just got so many books right now that I've been on a proof ban. But I think this was just before I stopped accepting. And I was like, I'll have a little bite of this, a little snack. I'll see what the first chapter's saying. And then it was like 3 days later and I'd finished it. So it's about three women whose lives are hugely changed by being disfellowshipped from a religion very heavily resembling Jehovah's Witnesses. It is so expertly written, but also it just kind of invited me into a world that like I've never really seen or even really thought about, in terms of, certainly I've had Jehovah's Witnesses that went to my school. I've met them on doorsteps like everyone else, but I'd never thought of the like disfellowshipping and how that would affect people and what that community is actually like from the inside. And it was just such a beautiful book. And again, that does have its moments of like humor and lightness, but it is, I would say, it certainly has a level of darkness to it and depth to it, but that's not a negative thing, because I think I just read Harriet's book and then I went on to read Jodie Chapman's book, and very, very different vibes, but both, again, what they do have in common is just that real technical God-given gift of like the word and just being like brilliant writers.
That sounds fascinating, because yeah, that's the gap between, what's the difference between a religion and a cult, I suppose.
Yes.
And the freedom you have, and especially I think for women trying to find their way in a religion.
Exactly, like that's what really kind of I found really fascinating, aside from it being so lovely to read because it's just so like nicely done, just that insight into that world. And as you said, what is the line between a cult and a religion? And I think watching these women try to like navigate the, you know, inverted commas, like real world, especially as someone who was raised in like a Christian household and grew up like, you know, going to church, but not having an experience anywhere near like relatable to it. It's just so interesting to see how the same texts and the same Bible can be used. And let's be honest, certainly in the case of like this book and what these women are experiencing in that comparable religion, weaponized to really oppress people, but of course, as usual, more specifically women.
That sounds great. I'm definitely going to have to read that. I'm really heartbroken because I could talk to you about books for about a year. I'm having so much fun, but I'm sort of aware that, you know, you've got lots of things to do, and very sadly I'm going to have to wrap this up. So I know you mentioned, you know, quite a few books on your list. Is there anything that you haven't mentioned that you'd really love to talk about, or anything that you're excited about that's on the pile that you are going to, the first thing you might break your proof ban for?
Oh, definitely Kylie Reid's Come and Get It. I know that's some time away, but I'm really, really looking forward to that. I haven't got either of these books yet, but I'm really looking forward to reading Penance by Eliza Clark. I haven't read Boy Parts, but like, I'm haunted by the fact I haven't read Boy Parts, because it's like, it comes up in every single conversation I've ever had about books. And I'm really looking forward to reading Megan Nolan's Ordinary Human Failings, because I remember reading Acts of Desperation. Again, one of those days where I was like, I'm just going to like read the first, I was sent it and thought, oh, I'll read the first chapter, and then like finished it within like a day. Excellent, like really, really great book. And I'm really looking forward to her second, because I think from what I'm hearing, it's very, 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 it's a big departure from the first one, which I think is exciting. So yeah, those are definitely on my radar.
And I think that's so interesting. We've just interviewed Lisa Jewell, and I was such a fan of her rom-coms and her sort of her books before she started writing thrillers. And I think she is the most, you know, phenomenal dark thriller writer, and has sort of become this kind of queen of that world. But yeah,
I think that's more how I know her, as a thriller writer.
Her first book's called Ralph's Party, and it's a kind of, I think it came out in like sort of late 90s or early 2000s, and it's that very kind of, it's sort of the Bridget Jones world, but Bridget Jones the book, but with a bit of an edge, and it's lots and lots of like drugs and going out, and it's very, very funny. But yeah, any writer who does so many things well and differently, I find that really inspiring.
Oh my gosh, like Rebecca Kwang, F. Kwang, who wrote Yellowface, and obviously wrote Babel before that.
I've not read Babel, have you?
I haven't read Babel, but I've heard that it's like a completely different vibe to Yellowface. And I'm fascinated by writers that can do that. I don't know if I can. I guess I've only written the one book, so I'm still yet to find out. But like my second book, which I'm trying to start now, is like, I'd be lying if I said it was a huge departure. Like it certainly is plot wise, but in terms of it being like satirical and being like humorous, but not like, it's very much, it's still written with that voice and that vibe. So I'm always fascinated when people are able to really just pivot in that way.
I'm desperate to ask about the next novel. Is it top secret? Can you tell me anything at all?
I can tell you some things. I can tell you that, like the list, I was going to write it as a report. Like I was going to write it as a long read sort of non-fiction piece. And then because the deal for the list was a two-book deal, I was like, what am I going to write about? And then I was like, oh, wait, I had this idea that felt too controversial to do as nonfiction and too difficult to do as nonfiction. So maybe I could explore the idea in fiction. And the themes are like very much like it focuses slightly more on race, but it's also about motherhood and identity. And I honestly think in terms of like theme, it's probably more more risky than the list is, I think. Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
Thank you.
I can't wait. I mean, that's kind of how my novel careering sort of started out. It's like all the things I'd been desperate to write about, you know, as sort of in journalism. And I wanted to explore that it was kind of, in a way, more fun. And I could go to more extreme places and more places that interested me and things that couldn't be resolved by writing as a novel.
Yeah. It's something that I'd never even thought was possible. I think before the list, I actually thought you can only write, there are some things that are non-fiction ideas and there's some things that are fiction ideas. The end. I didn't realise that there was scope to switch it around. So I'm glad I found out.
Well, I was thinking when you talked about Harriet Gibson, about that, I think emotionally as well, we can take things to fiction. We both know, and we've, you know, written sort of plenty of like sort of features and pieces and magazines where there's always a pressure to like, there's a word count and you've really got to resolve it in the end paragraph, be like, but I'm fine now and it's all going to be great. And actually you can be so much more, so much wilder and messier emotionally in fiction, which is why I love writing and reading it.
That's exactly why I'm like, I cannot wait for Harriet Gibson's fiction book, because I hope she's writing one, because I think just given how visceral and kind of messy and just insane and fun Is This Okay was, I just think she'd really body a fiction book. I can't remember still talking about that book. Like, I've posted
Harriet,
that so many times.
If you're listening, please.
She knows. I'm embarrassed a billion times about it.
It has been such a joy. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Daisy. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Huge thanks to Yummy. The list is out now, published by Fourth Estate. It's insightful, incisive, painfully funny, just plain painful in places, and brilliantly written. Your Book is created by me, Daisy Buchanan, and Dale Shaw, and edited and produced by Dale Shaw for New Alaska. You can find a list of all the books Yummy mentioned at acast.com/booked and see a selection on our page at bookshop.org. We're so grateful to everyone who shares the podcast, shouts about it, and especially to everyone who has given us a 5-star review. If you've not done it yet, it's the best way to help people find the podcast, and it means we can keep bringing brilliant book chat to your ears. We'll be taking a break for the summer, but we'll be back soon with some truly legendary guests. Meanwhile, find us and follow us at YBooked on social media to see what we're reading and recommending. Finally, I'll leave you with this from Deborah Levy. We do not have to conform to the way our life has been written for us, especially by those who are less imaginative than ourselves. See you soon.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.